Paper Ghosts is a production of iHeartRadio.
While going through the pile of documents Lisa White's mother had given to me, I ran across a newspaper article from 1975 I had somehow not paid much attention to over the years. The headline, "Attack Cases Begin to Surface." A description of the alleged perp, who had tried to abduct and sexually assault several young girls and a high school teacher, stood out. Early 20s, 5 feet 6 inches tall, stocky, dark hair and mustache, dark-rimmed glasses. I've compared it to a number of suspects that have been tied to these cases, and can say the composite sketch accompanying the article is akin to a photograph of Bob LaRosa. I showed the sketch to several of the people I've interviewed who knew Bob personally back in the day. Unanimously, all of them agreed the sketch resembled Bob. I've been sharing some of my findings with Bob LaRosa's youngest son, Mo, who was just 9 months old when his mother was murdered. Mo seems convinced his dad was not responsible. He protects his father in one way, and yet, in another, he's honest about possibilities and evidence. Growing up, Mo says, he and his siblings had all left home by the age of 16, mostly because, in Mo's view, they never saw their father. Bob was never around.
Through the years, he just worked, and you didn't see a lot of him. I'd get home from school, and he's sleeping. I go to bed, he gets up, and he goes to work.
I asked Mo what his dad thought about the Vernon Police Department reopening his mom's case in 2002, when forensic scientist Dr. Henry Lee became involved and went into the LaRosa's old apartment in Vernon to test for residual blood.
How did he feel about that whole thing in where they cut out the piece of floor and everything?
We actually spoke about that, and he was very calm about it. He said, well, you know, they're not going to find anything. He said, I didn't do anything wrong to hurt your mother.
There was such a minuscule amount of forensics found during the search, no human blood or DNA. There just wasn't enough to bring Bob to trial.
He was upset that my sister would do what he called a witch hunt on him. My sister was 3 years old, and you know, she claimed she sees things vividly from the day they were there. Right, even minute details, she's got it all down. 3-year-olds aren't, you couldn't do it.
I recently obtained a transcript dated September 30th, 1975, just after Stacy LaRosa started talking about her mother to a psychologist. Stacy talks about daddy hitting mommy in the stomach, mommy being asleep, and daddy putting mommy in the bedroom. Then, quote, mommy went shopping to the store by herself in the car. Stacy is asked, did daddy help mommy into the car? She answered, yes. And me and Maurice and my older brother were alone all day. A grand jury ultimately voted not to indict Bob LaRosa. All of the evidence was circumstantial. But throughout the years, Vernon police detectives kept on Bob, right up until the day he died. After defending his father, talking to me about how he and his dad went fishing together and how great a dad Bob was to him, I asked Mo if he could ever accept the fact, if it was ever proven, that his dad was a very bad man. Mo hesitated. He thought about how to respond. Then this.
I heard about it every year on the news, and I was like, you know, who really cares? They don't know who did it. They'll never find who did it. Let's just be quiet about it and let it go away. And then later on in life, I decided, you know, that's kind of the wrong attitude. I'm the youngest person involved in it. And if I don't step up and try to help figure it out and I die, that's it. It goes away. Because nobody below me is going to care.
Previously on Paper Ghosts.
An 11-year-old girl is riding her bicycle. She sees a car pass her. She goes a bit further. All of a sudden, a guy jumps out of the woods and drags her off the bicycle and is trying to take her into the woods.
For me, it felt like years getting the answer, just waiting. And it was right before my birthday. And I just kept saying to myself, all I want for my birthday is this to be found as Lisa. That's all I wanted.
Then they would say, but it's right here in this report that you said that. And they're like, they don't know if he was lying or really can't remember. They said it was hard to tell. Either he might just be a really good liar.
My name is M. William Phelps. This is Paper Ghosts. In talking to dozens of people connected to these cases, I have only one person left to interview, the witness. I'm told police spoke to him about the cases as recently as June 2019. I'm also told that in the state he moved to after leaving this area, there are two cases of missing girls nearby that he has been questioned about. With regards to those cases, one major crimes detective told me, I don't know about you, Phelps, but dead and missing girls, whenever I have moved, they don't follow me. I decided the best way to introduce myself and get him talking was in the form of a letter, to give him the opportunity to ponder what I want. I ended it with a request for the witness to call me, adding, if I did not hear from him, I would call in a few weeks.
Hello?
Hi, is Ian?
That's me.
My name's M. William Phelps. Call me Matthew. I sent you a letter a couple weeks ago. Did you get it?
Oh, okay. Vernon, Connecticut?
Yeah.
What do you want?
Well, I was just calling to chat a little bit about, you know, what I'm doing. I mean, from what I hear, you knew these guys pretty well, Bob and
Nathan. No, I didn't.
You didn't know Bob and Nathan?
No, I knew Bobby. He was my brother-in-law. And Nathan, I knew because he was related to Bobby, but I didn't know him that good.
That was so interesting to me. I didn't know them that good. Really? Immediately, the witness comes across hostile and impatient. The fact that he tells me, right off the bat, that he doesn't know Bob or Nathan LaRosa is actually astonishing, because this is factually untrue. But look, I go along with it. What I'm doing is a podcast, so I just wanted to make sure you had your opportunity to speak.
But I'm done talking, like I told the cop when I gave my deposition here. Two freaking days. There was four cops come up. Investigators.
It was actually just three cops. And when he refers to deposition, he means interview.
They kept saying, well, did you kill? I said, look, for the last fucking time, I didn't kill anybody. I didn't hurt anybody. I don't know what's going on with all this shit. I wasn't friends with Robert LaRosa or Nathan LaRosa or any of them.
Is there anything you can tell me about, you know, those guys, that time? I mean, everything I'm looking at is pointing, like, to Bob LaRosa as a guy who probably killed his wife, but maybe also involved in some other disappearances in the area.
I knew him as a brother-in-law. We hung out when we had functions at the house. Other than that, I didn't want nothing to fucking do with him. When I got married, when I bought my house, I separated myself from all of those people. And my wife kept in contact with Bobby. Why, I don't know.
Your ex-wife?
Bobby doing them.
Your ex-wife, Ann?
Yeah.
That ex-wife would be Ann Gonthier, who you've heard in previous episodes. She's one of Susan LaRosa's sisters and alleged the witness was violent during their marriage. She claimed he'd leave for days at a time with no explanation of where he went. The witness, in turn, claims the same about Ann.
I was in the hospital when a lot of this shit was going on, and then I was in a wheelchair, and no. All she has to do is think back of what was going on and where the hell she was all those nights that she took off and I was babysitting. I was watching our kids. Oh, I'm going over here to see a friend of mine.
All that hospital stuff, the wheelchair, and going out, there is zero corroborating evidence I could find to support any of it. In fact, all I have are people telling me the exact opposite.
You know, they ought to check my ex-wife. She never got along with her sister whatsoever. And I mean, she hated her to a fucking passion. And to turn around and say, I did this, no.
It seemed to me as we got into it that the witness wanted to push any attention away from his connection to the LaRosas. It's important to say that the witness has never been charged with a crime connected to any of these cases. Yes, he's injected himself into the narrative. Yes, police have questioned him multiple times. But the guy is still clearly upset because he believes Tina LaRosa, the niece of Irene LaRosa, told police he mentioned bodies and water wells up at Crystal Lake. And here, next, he speaks directly about Tina.
Boy, that girl's got a hell of an imagination. She hangs around Ann and all those people. And then she tried to say I was saying all kinds of shit about her aunt or whatever it is. And I said, no, that wasn't said.
Yeah, I think...
No, son, I said, I'm... I said, yeah, that's one of the reasons I moved away.
It's faint, but you can hear in the background the witness's second wife kind of reminding him what to say. Not for nothing, but he comes off as if barely knowing Tina, despite the fact that they've spoken a number of times at length about Irene LaRosa and the location of certain water wells. And I've heard two voicemails he has left on Tina's phone, both of which prove that he knows her very well. Then that last call they had, in fact, being monitored by police, which tipped them off to dig up a spot on the Wendell's property. The problem here is that when you have a person of interest, like the witness per se, you want to be careful about showing your cards. But Tina frequently shares her thoughts and unverified claims all over Facebook, and you can imagine how that's going to make someone like the witness feel.
She was bringing up wells all the time, and she says, where's the wells? I said, when I was a kid, there were some wells out in the woods and all that. I said, that's all I can tell you. I said, you're going to have to go look for them. Then she kept saying all kinds of shit that I was telling her about the well. And like I told the cops, I said, no, I never said that.
Right.
Yeah, so.
That voice in the background mentions something about money. And the witness confirms who is advising him on the call.
Like my wife said, there's money involved and they'll do anything to convict anybody. And they don't give a shit if the person's innocent or not.
What he's referring to is the $150,000 reward that Talon County State's Attorney's Office offered for any information leading to an arrest or location of a body in the disappearances. That said, the witness makes a point. Money, it changes things for people.
I also read that you knew Irene LaRosa a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Do you think she's...
And from what I'm hearing, other people telling me, she was nothing but a goddamn slut.
Irene?
Yeah.
Who's saying that?
Different people would call me up from Connecticut and say, hey, did you hear about Irene? And, you know, she was known as a slut. I even know her. I took her to bed and that, and he says, that's all she does is jump in bed with this guy or that guy. I said, no. I said, I don't want to know anything about anybody down there.
Do you think Irene is missing?
I don't know. They said she was.
Yeah, the missing person report was just filed in 2016. I mean, according to the report, she went missing in 1971.
Well, if they can't find her, she is missing, right?
That subtle laugh he utters can be construed two ways. One, he knows. Or two, he's being facetious. It's how he says, if they can't find her, that bothers me. And what's clear as we get into it further, the witness is not stupid. I need to explain a bit of context here. The state police, many of whom I know, have stayed at arm's length during my investigations. They speak to me. I believe they respect me. I provided them with tips since 2013. But at the same time, they share nothing with me. I do get it. But things haven't been easy since the newest detective on the cases took over, about 2 years ago now. I first met her during a memorial service for Janice Pocket. We spoke. I handed her my card. I told her to give me a call. I had lots of information. She never called. She's aware of what I've been doing, but it's basically been radio silence on her end. That is, until I emailed her to let her know I had spoken with the witness. She emailed me back within minutes and asked if I could meet with her immediately. That alone tells me how important the witness and what he has to say is, in particular, when you read between the lines of his responses.
You were in Vietnam, right? What years did you were you in Vietnam?
Oh, shit. A long while. But I mean, when all this shit was going on, that's where I was.
That would have put him in Vietnam sometime between 1968 to 1975. Impossible for him not to know the dates. And even more impossible for him to have been in Vietnam in 1975, when Susan LaRosa went missing. He brings up Bob LaRosa again.
I see him a couple of times after I got out. That was it.
Do you remember if Bob drove a station wagon?
I don't know if he drove a station wagon or not.
That silence before he answers, it makes me wonder.
Do you think Bob LaRosa's a guy who's capable of killing his wife?
Oh, yeah.
The other thing do you know if Bob worked for the Tolland school system at all?
No. I worked for the Tolland school system.
Oh, you like a janitor or maintenance or something?
The maintenance man, janitor, whatever.
If you recall, Janice Pocket's medical records from school went missing before she disappeared. Several sources have told me the witness worked for the Tolland school system, but I needed to verify it for myself. Doesn't mean he swiped those records. It only means he had the opportunity.
I also heard Bob was like a scrap metal guy. He just drove around collecting scrap metal or something.
Yeah, and what he couldn't find, he stole.
I get a sense the witness is carefully answering me, thinking long and hard about what he is saying. For a guy who told me when we first got going that he didn't know much about any of this, and didn't even really know Bob LaRosa, he certainly knows specific details. Listen to how he then interrupts my question with an answer.
And I also read in a report that Bernadette came over and she...
Cleaned up the blood in that, yeah.
Yeah, cleaned up the blood.
Because I'm going to tell you, the Vernon police, not the ones they got nowadays, because there are two of them come up here and they were nice cops. And the ones back in the day, they were crooked as hell. And Bobby LaRosa would bring in prostitutes and everything, drugs and all that shit, right into the station. And very seldom did he ever get a ticket. And I mean to say is, he'd be going down a road in a 25-mile-an-hour zone, doing 60. And there's Vernon cops that you think they got to give him a ticket? Nope. They put your head down.
Do you know if Bob hung out at the Igloo restaurant?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. See, like I said, I didn't hang around them. Everybody says I hung around them, we chummed around, went drinking, and I didn't. That's a bunch of bullshit.
The witness goes on to tell me he only has one lung left, that cancer has taken the other from him, and he now has tumors all over the remaining lung.
Do you still smoke?
No. And I've had, I want to say... 250, maybe 300 tumors taken off my chest.
Remember that memory trigger from Stacy LaRosa, Bob and Susan's daughter? The cherry tobacco smoke? The conversation offered me the opportunity to now get into that.
Did you ever smoke?
I smoked, 30 years ago.
Cigarettes?
And they checked me out and they said, it ain't from smoking. They said, it's that Agent Orange.
I have to admit, I'm rather surprised the witness has stayed on the phone with me this long. Then again, it was because of his lengthy phone calls with Tina that prompted the police to get the ball rolling in my investigation. After all these years of staying quiet, you have to wonder why he's so willing to talk now, and if maybe he had injected himself into these cases because he felt he had to. And as we get started talking again, he makes an important point.
You're going to find somebody that's going to say all kinds of shit about me. I'm up here and I'm not down there because I can't defend myself with that person the minute they say it. But I mean, after it's said, it's out there, so it's going to travel. You tell me something that's good that travels fast. It doesn't. If it's bad, it travels like wildfire.
I mean, what would you say to those people who say that you were involved in Irene and the girls and helping Bob and everything?
I already told you that. I had nothing to do with any of them. It's easy to point the finger and say he did it, or she did it, or they did it, but to go down and prove it is something else.
Right. I mean, that's why I'm calling you. That's why I'm giving you the opportunity to...
And I told you what I know, which ain't very much, and... Like I said, I didn't hurt nobody, I didn't kill anybody, and I didn't kidnap anybody.
It's interesting to me that the witness brings in kidnapping. I mean, kidnapping had never been raised in relation to any of these cases.
I never helped anybody do anything against any of the girls that's missing.
My goal was to begin a conversation and keep the channels open. He seemed like he had reached his daily limit of talking. I mentioned how I'd like to call back soon, once I learned more information. He told me to do whatever I wanted.
That's all I got to say on the matter right now.
Since we last spoke, the witness has gone quiet. I wound up calling him back no fewer than 5 times over the course of the next several months. He never took one call or responded to a voicemail. I was told by law enforcement that he said he was done talking to anyone. He said what he needed to say, and it's just not enough to locate a body. So, it's time I move on from him and do the one thing I know I can do. In the final episode of Paper Ghosts.
I'm scared that they'll find something, and then I'm scared that they won't find something. So, I'm all over the place.
We're looking for possibly the dog's pacing to slow down, head hooks one way or the other. Usually they slow down and get more intense.
Memories fade, people die, people move away. But we don't give up. You know, we're still hoping for that breakthrough that's going to give us the answers we've been looking for many, many years.
Paper Ghosts is written and executive produced by me, M. William Phelps, with help from producer Christina Everett and sound editing by Pete Cardi from Backroom Audio. A special thanks to Abu Safar and Will Pearson from iHeartRadio. The series theme, number 442, is written and performed by Tom Mooney and Thomas Phelps. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.